Hello, and welcome to the Covenant of Mayors podcast. I'm Anthony Coakley, and today I'll be speaking with Stella Staropoulou. Stella has worked as an officer at the municipality of Thessaloniki for 17 years, and in the recent years as a strategic planning and funding management officer at the Department of Operational Planning and Development Program Monitoring. Since 2016, she's been team member of the Resilient Thessaloniki office and contributed to the launch and implementation of the city's resilience strategy, Thessaloniki 2030. Since 2019, she's been the deputy chief resilience officer. She's also the municipality's project coordinator for the finance contract with the European Investment Bank and project team member of a number of European-funded projects on urban resilience and sustainable development. I'm speaking to her today about the state of play in her city and her engagement with the Covenant of Mayors Technical Assistance Programme, which is part of the Policy Support Facility, a one-year pilot initiative to accelerate adaptation to climate change in 37 European cities and regions. In part one of this podcast, From Funding to Floods, Stella will tell me about the challenges her city is facing and explain how engaging with the Covenant of Mayors Policy Support Facility and other European and international programs has boosted her city's efforts to overcome those challenges. In part two, she'll break open Thessaloniki's efforts in strategic planning and explain how the city is engaging with local people and organizations to be part of a big push towards climate neutrality. Stella, thanks a lot for joining me today.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a unique opportunity for me.
We're getting this really strong, clear call from the European Commission, the UN, and international bodies that cities should stop planning and take climate action. Can you tell me, what are the hurdles that are falling in the way of progress for local government?
I would rather speak for Greece's perspective, because the governmental system is centralized. So local authority governance in Greece consists of two main levels, municipalities and regions. This approach to governance results in the following challenges: lack of economic independence of municipalities, complicated, disjoint, and conflicting jurisdictional boundaries across municipalities, regional authorities, and central government on issues like mobility, flood prevention, and risk management. And third, the management of European funds stops at the regional level. That means that municipalities have less opportunities on funding tools. To tackle these challenges, local governments firstly need to learn how to cooperate together and not to work in silos. Capacity building, constantly training of the staff, upskilling, linkages with academia and research, and more collaboration with the civil society are much needed. And those are some of the factors that may block, not only in Greece, moving from planning to actions that could actually have measurable impact on the ground.
So just to reiterate, you said that the national government deals more with regions than municipalities.
Regions have the funding capacity, and the national government has the central observation for the two local authorities, the regions and the municipalities as well. But everything starts and ends to the national government.
So not enough autonomy on the municipal level.
Yes. Yeah.
And do I understand that you answer to the national and the regional level then for example, funding needs?
Especially for that, yeah.
Is it something that you've seen any movement on in Greece over the last decades?
I think that this is how the system works. This is how the legislative framework has been set. So it's a permanent pressure from all the municipalities towards to national governments. They actually need more financial autonomy and more participation on the decision-making process, especially on law-making.
We started off making the point about the global level, saying that there are issues for cities to take climate action more so than they have been. But there is certainly a case to be made that actually cities are already extremely active on this topic, and maybe even that it's the national government in many cases where there's more reluctance, where there's more slowness.
perhaps it's not appropriate to say that cities should stop planning and take action, but that actually the national governments need to facilitate the action of cities. Would that be a fair way to rephrase it?
Yeah, and I would say that we should seek more on a bottom-up approach. Cities could have a vital role, So that can be the mission to reach this kind of approach.
When it comes to the problems facing cities, you mentioned silos and you mentioned the need for capacity. So when it comes to capacity, can you talk a little bit about technical assistance, to what degree it's needed and the best way that it could be implemented locally?
Technical assistance can be a tool. Capacity building is also a way that can provide guidelines, knowledge, constantly training. All these can be tools that can provide the motivation and incentivize, especially the human resources, the officers of a municipality, to scale up their capacity and have better results. So yes, technical assistance is needed. Technical assistance can be helpful and give all the capacity that needs, not only to officers, but we're talking about also the politicians, that they do lead on these kind of measures that we need to take.
You've been engaged a little bit in the technical assistance element of the Covenant of Mayors. Could you tell us a little bit about how that enabled or is likely to enable change on the ground, and if you would foresee future technical assistance following this kind of a model or maybe going in a different direction?
Technical assistance is a tool that has to remain as an option, but it's not just that. Each city might have a range of tools that might need and can use depending on their needs and the challenges that they face. Regarding climate actions, for example, we're talking about several cities, different needs, same challenge, same problems. Technical assistance can actually be helpful for a city such as Thessaloniki, but it might not be that helpful for another city.
You've been involved in the policy support facility in the Covenant of Mayors. Can you tell me a little bit about your involvement as a potential model for future technical assistance?
We decided to participate on this program as an opportunity to highlight not good practices, but bad practices that needs to be changed. Different mindset, let's just say. We have already managed to organize a meeting with stakeholders and different municipality divisions. And we actually linked that with the Net Zero Cities Mission workshops, because we wanted to emphasize what are the interlinkages of mitigation and adaptation under the lens of climate crisis. It's something that we wanted to have a more holistic approach on this mitigation, climate neutrality, and adaptation.
So working with the European level through Covenant of Mayors and also with other cities, as if I understand rightly, has been something that for Thessaloniki has help to demonstrate to all of the stakeholders within the municipality and also within the city territory the importance of this mission and also the importance of the city as an actor in the mission.
Yes, and the importance of implementing what the mission wants. As you mentioned, I'm part of the resilience team since 2016, and the whole process of developing the strategy was something new for the city, because it was the first time having a more participatory approach where stakeholders, entities, public or private sector, sat on the same table to set a common vision and goals for the city, all the challenges that may face. In these days, climate change and climate problems didn't seem so crucial, let's just say, because we needed to move to chronic pressures that the city had, social and economic. We just coming out from economic crisis, so we had to face the reconstruction, let's just say, of the economic model of the city. Since then, I have seen different. It's been 70 years now, and we have seen multiple crises, and most of them related to climate. Extreme weather events are more usual, especially during the spring and summer season. 2 days before, we experienced one of these, flooding problems, strong winds, a lot of consequences, as you can imagine, and heat waves. Each year, the feeling of the heat is unbearable. During the midsummer days, we experienced summer days with 45 Kelsey degrees, and apparently the heat island effect is raised. We are a city, we know that we are a city that lacks of green spaces, so the phenomenon makes it, this phenomenon even evident, especially to specific groups of people and children and elderly. So since 2016, we have to face many, many crises. So climate, it needs to be embedded in our agenda, on our daily agenda nowadays.
How do you deal with that extreme heat on a personal level? What's your technique?
Air condition is mainly, it starts working around June, and we turn it off on around September. So when we say that perhaps winters are very smooth and we don't have heat situations, problem with heating buildings, now we have the cooling situation, and that related to the energy crisis that we need to face, that raises up a lot about the resilience of our energy sufficiency.
And did you say there were floods 2 days ago?
Yeah, extreme rainfalls that links to flooding. And 2 days before, we have strong wind due to the geography of Thessaloniki. And flooding, it's something that we can see that whenever it rains, we have flooding situations.
Well, what do you understand as climate action in the context of your work?
I want to be realistic and to have this consideration as a practitioner. We can suggest a lot of things, and I can suggest from my perspective a lot of things, how and what do I think of climate actions. But the city of Thessaloniki is a densely populated city, lots of mixed use though, but with environmental degradation, aged buildings, mostly grey infrastructure. So under this context, we have to think of solutions and measures and actions that are actionable. And we have a vital contribution, and they do impact on the city's infrastructure. That means that we can think a range of climate actions, but that doesn't mean that could actually happen and be feasible for Thessaloniki. From my experience, we have made steps forward, but we still need to upscale more on transforming to another model of working together, as I've said, to the model of circular economy, and to work all the municipality, the politicians, and the local ecosystem. So if we can plant more trees, yet we need to raise awareness on what's the main point of planting these trees and to remain those trees, and how also to green the roofs or the balcons of the houses, how to engage and motivate the citizens to understand why do we need more green spaces and how can we keep those green spaces, because it's not only the jurisdiction of the municipality. On the other hand, participatory approaches need to be added to the municipality's operation. It's not that common use. Perhaps they don't sound like the state of the art, but there are big steps that needs to be taken for the municipality of Thessaloniki. So when we build a school or a park, the neighborhood should and must participate in co-designing. But first of all, I believe, and this is something that from the project, the program we're seek for, is the cross-sectoral, cross-governmental collaboration during the whole process of a project, from the designing until the construction, the conservation. And in this, we need to add the data-driven processes and the digital approach.
There's the more particular activities, and then there's the real need for sort of a wider transformation of the ecosystem itself.
Yes, if I may, for example, we can build a green roof, for example, in a school. If we don't engage the school community, then we will have constructed just a green roof that it's going to be degraded someday.
They need to be people that can carry that vision forward on the ground. Is there a particular measure in the field of climate that your city is in the process of implementing or has implemented, one that sticks out to you because you're particularly proud of it?
Well, it's a tricky question. There are several small actions, steps, or opportunities which may sound rather common to an experienced ear, but for Thessaloniki's context are big steps. For example, being part of big international or European projects, starting from the 100 Resilient Cities Network back in 2015, the city that were selected by the Commission for the climate neutrality, the PSF Technical Assistance Now, yearly collaboration with EIB, and we are part of the Advisory Hub, also a technical assistance that offered us on waste management and urban regeneration, the collaboration with the World Bank, and these big organizations brought to us a new perspective, a new way of working. I think that I'm proud for all these steps that we have made, these opportunities that we took, we exploited, because it gave a lot to our knowledge and to our capacity. We started from small scale impacts, and I believe that now we can transfer them to bigger scale. However, I guess more need to be done. Apparently, more challenges raise up. We saw our lacks during COVID. Nevertheless, the municipality tries to enhance its preparedness and to future-proof the city.
Cooperating with the World Bank and being named as a mission city don't sound like small steps to me. I'd love to hear something about these smaller things throughout the municipality. For example, I know that we spoke before about this urban vineyard. I don't know if you want to use that as an illustration or if there's something else similar going on that might be interesting to talk about as a smaller scale or a more local action to adapt to the changing climate.
Well, NPS solutions are something that we now put on our operational or strategic planning, and it's not just planning, it's now how to implement those solutions. The urban vineyard has several aspects, as you said, because it can also be related as an NBS solution for the neighborhood, keeping the flooding, preventing flooding, and it's a green space for a specific neighborhood, which is very approximate to the city center. So we can say that it's an example that we can be proud of.
And NBS, for our listeners, is nature-based solutions, right?
Right, yes. Sorry for that.
It's a nice example because, as I remember, it's something that has, and I think it's often the case with nature-based solutions, it's something that has so many levels because, practically speaking, it's a green area. There's also an economic aspect. There's also community engagement aspect, right? I mean, these are all double wins and triple wins. It's not that you just are focusing on climate and that's it and nothing else happens.
Yeah, actually it started from another perspective, but we see that, yeah, it has linkages to other also approaches, and climate can be this kind of perspective also. And now we are part also with the Urban Vineyard Association, where other cities with urban vineyards are a part of it. And it's something that I have to congratulate my colleagues on the Green Department that they managed to do that. So now they do networking on these urban vineyards that other cities have, and they can see what can be all the linkages and how they impact on this. I would say about the urban vegetable gardens, they're in the same area with the urban vineyard. So they were individual projects that now linked together, and they give great result, let's just say, because the vegetable gardens were project from a few students that they used the municipality's plot in order to bring people from a neighborhood to cultivate their own food. They realized that had multiple results, starting from the community engagement, because those gardens, there are in municipalities field. However, they do operate and they exploit them. The municipality only provides the water supply on this and the electricity, of course. And they have made a very strong community that they take care of all area. They clean the area. They take care of the green spaces, and they take care also the urban vineyard that it is on the same spot. So it started as a project for building community vegetable garden, and it ended up with multiple results, multiple impacts on that. And one of that was the community engagement. It was the changing of the microclimate of the area. It shows up how we can collaborate with citizens and how to motivate those citizens. And especially now, it brings how people can cultivate their own food and have access to healthy food and safe food. So they are projects that started differently, individually, on the same plot, but they have many linkages between them and have many good impacts.
What vegetables are they growing there out of interest?
As it's season, they change those vegetables. Yeah. Spring, summer, much more from them, tomatoes. Winter is more difficult. But it's amazing to see that they change and they keep a small back seed for each other.
I just love the idea of an urban vineyard for engaging businesses and community around climate adaptation. I wish we could have one in every city. It was also interesting to hear about an unexpected secondary value of European and international engagement to help get other local colleagues and stakeholders involved by conveying the importance of the issues at hand. And, of course, we heard again what so many cities have stressed already, how vital it is to be engaged directly in policy decisions with the national government. As I mentioned in the intro, Stella has played an important role in developing her city's resilience strategy. In part two of the podcast, I want to get her insights into strategic thinking and how Thessaloniki uses strategy planning as a way to engage with all kinds of people and organizations to create consensus and move towards shared goals that are far more ambitious than what the city could achieve alone.
In your work with other cities, I'm sure that you've learned a lot and increased your capacity, but I'm sure that there are also things related to climate adaptation that Thessaloniki has been able to share that could be useful to other cities. What would you choose from Thessaloniki's approach that you would say, hey, this is something that a lot of other cities in Europe could benefit from?
Indeed, I would say that, awareness on what is climate adaptation per se? It's something that we have gained from this exchange from other cities. And nature-based solutions that has been implemented, so we can see and we can learn from the whole circle how to design, how to implement, and on how can they impact these solutions. So how to raise urban greening on a dense area. These are kind of examples and good cases that we have seen as parts of city networks or by participating to European programs like Horizon, especially the Horizon now that we run with the Eurocities, the food trails. I would say that it's changed our perspective on what sustainable food policies result on. And it's not the urban vineyard only, it's the examples as the urban agriculture that can be regarded as means that could enhance climate resilience as well.
So what's happening in Thessaloniki that you would say is a really good practice that other cities could take on board and get moving with?
I would say that our city's progress on strategic planning and how we can move from planning and going towards action in pilot areas and urban vegetable gardens that we have been operating and the urban vineyard, as you have mentioned. The waterfront has been refurbished since 2011. And it opened up again the citizens towards the sea because we are a port city. So it was a very good example how to change by spatial planning, by a new regeneration of an area, change the whole perspective of the city. And it opened up also touristically. So I think that this kind of regenerations of specific areas change a lot of how we design and a lot of how we implement some of the technical projects.
Cities are asked more and more to make sure they have strategic plans as well as biodiversity plans and urban mobility plans. There's a proliferation of plans and they're increasingly important for getting access to funding and things like that, but also having the vision understood by many players and also at national level. Can you tell me a little bit about how to go about actually getting a good plan in place?
For us, it was the opportunity given by being members of the 100 Resilience Network. That gave us the opportunity to develop a long-term strategic plan. But what was the first time for Thessaloniki was the participatory and robust approach that followed. And in order to develop a common vision and to deploy and elaborate on actions that they weren't always the jurisdiction of the municipality. It was, and it is, a strategic document because it refers until 2030, and that should have been adopted and could have been adopted by the whole city, the city's ecosystem, and start implementing those actions all together. And it wasn't only that the city was the liaison, for example, the municipality, the enabler that, okay, we have seen all these challenges and now we should start working towards those challenges all together. So after that, we took advantage and opened up the opportunities being part of city networks, being part in European programs, and we used this strategic plan as a driver to either to update or to implement those actions that we have put in as a goal. So I believe that taking advantage of the opportunities that the Commission opens to other cities, very important and can bring a lot of opportunities in front of us.
I think it's a really, really strong message with the strategic plan, not to focus on just planning to do what you know you can do by yourself, but setting a vision that is citywide and that everyone needs to come on board to achieve.
Right, exactly that. And this is how to raise the resilience thinking, as we say, start working out together. Another different approach of working, that means to move from the systemic approach. And this, it's not usually easy, but I think that when we have to deal with challenges, crises, multiple crises coming again and again, I think that changing the way we think and the way we work, it's vital.
You said you're part of the city's mission, the European city's mission. Can you tell our listeners what the city's mission is and this extraordinary commitment you've made to achieving a lot in this short amount of time?
Yeah, because it's not just one mission. The first mission is we are part of the 112 cities that seek to be climate neutral until 2030 as front runners for the other cities in the European Union. So now we do work on the climate city contract, which is the commitment as part of the net zero cities mission. But we are also part of the EU mission about adaptation on climate change. And on this, we committed and we signed up a charter, the charter of the mission, in order to start working harder on adaptation measures and solutions. So for Thessaloniki, now climate resilience is in high priority in our agenda. And Thessaloniki seeks to engage stakeholders of the city, academia, the civil society, strengthen their commitment, because a climate city contract, it's not a work only for a municipality. We are the biggest municipality in a metropolitan area. Another 10 municipalities are around us, so we need to work all together. And we need to commit into specific measurable actions and enhance this cross-governmental and cross-sectoral collaboration. The planning process now, it's at very fast pace, because until 2030 the time is limited, and we need to pass to actions and to impacts. Crises are keep going, but we need to exploit also funding opportunities, the new programmatic or the structure of funds, and other financial tools such as the RRF that is limited until 2025.
It's interesting that you mentioned the RRF, which for our listeners is the Recovery and Resilience Fund. European level.
Glad that we have the resilience on this big campaign and this financial tool of the EU.
You mentioned towards the start of our conversation difficulties being sufficiently engaged by the national level, and I know that in the Recovery and Resilience Facility, there was actually a clause asking the national level to engage cities in order to have a more effective collaboration towards the European goals and the recovery goals. And we heard that only 5% of the cities that we surveyed at Eurocities were actually considered to have been properly involved. Can you tell me a little bit about how your experience was being involved in this process, the consultation over the funds, and consequently how the process has improved or not improved, or if the funds are there for the things that Thessaloniki needs them for these goals?
Apparently, the RRF is being held and being facilitated, managed on a national level. They did have a consultation with cities. There is an association of the cities, and they did take part on this consultation, bringing the needs in general that cities can and local governments can face. So they specific, we are 332 cities and municipalities, So yes, through this association, there has been highlighted and noted the problems and what we are going to need. However, RRF and structural funds are, they need a lot of maturity, and a lot of municipalities really need to run in order to meet all the needs that the proposals have. And in this case, Thessaloniki is one of the big cities, so the ministries are open to us to listen to specific needs. However, we need to follow the program, and this means proposal specific areas and specific projects that needs to be funded. Digital transformation and green transition is one of the main priorities of the RRF on the national government too.
Okay, great. So there's good cooperation. When it comes to getting to where you want to be, do you feel like that the support and the engagement in general is adequate from the European and from the national levels? Or do you have the feeling that things can be improved there, or that there will be other specific supports necessary to help you and also all of the other cities to reach these important goals?
I think that we see a lot of engagement from the EU. However, needs to be more strict or directed to the national governments, that they don't follow the same needs. However, I think that direct funding opportunities from the EU, even from these missions, we can see that there's a lot of pressing, that the pressure that they do, the Commission does to the national governments, especially for all these cities, because it's not just one city per country. There are more than one cities. And here in Greece, we are six cities, and we have joined our forces all together in order not to implement or not just to deploy the city contract as we are committed on it, but how to push and pressure national government. We have national elections in May. So it's an opportunity to pressure that, okay, we are going to be the front runners, but you have to do something like that. And it is something that we also heard on the kickoff meeting from the Commission and commissioners, that, okay, you need to push national governments too. We give the tool, we give the opportunities, we are going to give the funding through Horizon programs, for example, but national governments need to fund as well and to give some grants, not only to 1, 2, 6, 5, 10 cities that they have been selected, but they need to start this working to other cities as well.
Can I ask you one last question before we go?
Yes.
You've been there in the municipality for so long, and you've seen so many changes in the approach, and you've also seen so many crises, especially recently. Can you tell me just a bit more about how it's evolved through these crises and how you see the role and the commitment of the individuals around you to these goals as well?
I will have to say that from my experience, when we started talking about crisis, people couldn't actually understand why are we talking about another crisis. The only crisis that we are actually facing, it's economical crisis. At that moment, that was the most important thing that happening in our lives. But through these years, very huge crisis, including COVID. I mean, COVID gave us a totally another perspective, something that impacts in my life, but it happens internationally, worldwide, something that started from another place in the planet and impacted in my daily life, that stopped my daily life, for example. So I think that notions such as sustainability or resilience, they were strained, especially in Thessaloniki. And nowadays, they start having a meaning. After we started having a common literature let's just say, under resilience, and why do we need to talk about this, and why do we need to be more involved on this thing? I think that we put a seed back in 2016, but we can see now growing something good. It's not easy. It's difficult. Apparently, sometimes we need to face a crisis in order to understand why we had to plan it before. An example that was, we were talking about digital transformation. We need to move real fast during COVID. And we need to plan other crises that might happen. And it did. We had a cyber attack. And we had major problems, but the most important problem was how quickly we could actually switch and come back to where we were. So it was a crisis that we used to say that in the resilience office and say that, okay, we should matter and we should take care of that. But it was like, okay, no, we might not have to face this kind of thing. Yes, but we do. Crises are not going to stop from happening. And I think that it's more important to understand how to switch on another model of working. Systemic change needs to be done. But on this, it's not a job of some officers or specific departments within a municipality. A municipality is not just a bureaucratic organization. It's more than that. Influence and impacts the daily life of citizens. And on this, political engagement and commitment plays a crucial role. And under this lens, I think that we need to focus also on this political engagement.
So, in a sense, the more recent crises and the COVID crisis have given people a better understanding of the whole apparatus of risk management and resilience that they can employ to think about previously more abstract issues like the climate as well.
Yes, because I think that we can face that daily now. We can understand that. In every season, we can actually understand why some people, we advocate on climate change and why we need to take some actions and why all these assessments and why the EU does all these campaigns on climate has to transform it into actions and projects and specific technical projects. And I think that climate is thematic that needs to be within the daily conversations.
So circling back to the first point we made, the action is there in cities. The door just needs to be open to let those actions flourish.
Yes, because I think that the impacts and the effects of the climate are mostly on cities. So if the cities are not well prepared, so the effects are going to have more huge consequences on infrastructure and on society as well.
Well, Stella, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me about this today. It's incredible what's happening in Thessaloniki, and I look forward to learning more about the journey.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity as well. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Covenant of Mayors podcast. Remember, you can find a full transcript of this episode, as well as our other episodes, at the Covenant of Mayors Europe website, eu-mayors.ec.europa.eu. Thanks a lot for listening along.